Television, if you would start at this time. Again, we're on record in Smith versus Smith. Mr. Derek Pika is representing Mr. Ballard Smith, or Ms. Ballard's, Mr. Ballard Smith, the appellant, and Stanley Welsh is representing the respondent. Rebecca Anderson, who did much of the trial work, is appearing only. Are there any preliminary matters by either party?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Very well. You may proceed, Mr. Pika.
Thank you, Your Honor. Honorable Justices of the Idaho Supreme Court, Counsel Ms. Stan Welsh and Becky Anderson. This court involves an appeal in regard to a piece of property in a longstanding divorce case. The actual judgment decree of divorce was entered in 2003. What this appeal relates to is a corporation and a California corporation and property owned by that corporation at the time of the divorce. In the trial court, the magistrate court's findings of fact, and I may refer to the magistrate court as the divorce court, the magistrate court made what we believe are three findings of fact that really are relevant to this appeal. The first finding was that my client, Ballard Smith, owned stock in purchased stock or acquired interest in stock in a corporation known as Sun Mountain Broadcasting, Inc., which is a California corporation in 1985. That same year, Sun Mountain Broadcasting, Inc. acquired a parcel of real property that was located in Salt Lake City, Utah, in Salt Lake County. That parcel of real property was never identified in any of the decrees of divorce. There were no legal descriptions or anything. It was just simply referred to as the Salt Lake property. The parties were married on January 23, 1988. That's finding of fact three. Finding of fact two relates to when Mr. Smith acquired his interest in Sun Mountain Broadcasting and when Sun Mountain Broadcasting acquired the Salt Lake property. Finding of fact nine is that Ballard and Smith and Charlie Smith were divorced on April 14, 2003. And that was a partial divorce that was submitted pursuant to Rule 54B certificate, which was final, but not all of the property had been divided. However, in that order that was entered on April 14, 2003, there was a, in the property and debt schedule, there was a LLC identified as BNC Realty LLC, which was a community LLC, and the property and debt schedule indicated that it owned or held title to what's identified as 48 acres of Salt Lake property. BNC at that time did not hold title Sun Mountain to any property, real property anywhere in Utah. And at the time of divorce, Sun Mountain Broadcasting still, well, held title to the Salt Lake property. In finding of fact number nine, the magistrate court found that there is no evidence that prior to the party's divorce, any portion of the Salt Lake property was sold or transferred to any other person or entity. So the deed is clear as to who held it, and the respondents in their brief have admitted that the Salt Lake property was owned and title was held by Sun Mountain Broadcasting as of the date of divorce. Idaho Code Section 32712 is very specific that divorce courts in the state of Idaho only have jurisdiction to, well, they have obviously jurisdiction as to children and whatever, but as in regard to property, they only have jurisdiction, the courts only have jurisdiction to divide community property.
Mr. Pica, before we start talking about the law, I'd like to go back to the facts concerning this property and make sure that I understand some of the facts. One of the things that frustrates this appeal is that there are no trial exhibits in the record.
There are no trial exhibits in the record?
No. We have checked with the clerk's office. My understanding is that there are no trial exhibits that were transmitted or requested from the trial court. And one of the things that I'm looking at, I believe it was Judge Kibido's opinion, speaks specifically about one of the exhibits being a cover letter, or that's my word, cover letter, from an attorney for Sun Mountain, where it explains that a deed, a warranty deed, transferring title from Sun Mountain to BNC is enclosed and that it has been executed but not recorded. Where in the record do we have, I mean, what can we point to explain whether that deed exists or does not exist, or give me some explanation of that letter?
Okay. That letter was part of what I call a document dump in the trial court that wasn't even discussed by any of the witnesses. The letter.
Was it a trial exhibit?
It was a trial exhibit, yes.
Was it admitted into evidence?
The letter was admitted into evidence, yes. And I believe in the briefing it's mentioned specifically as the exhibit number. The letter stated a portion of the property was deeded pursuant to what it called a grant deed, not a warranty deed.
Okay.
And two, it stated to a Ballard's Idaho LLC. It did not say to BNC Realty.
Do any of the witnesses testify about the circumstances of that deed?
No, not to my recollection. As I say, it was stipulated that a lot of exhibits were admitted into evidence. There were binders of exhibits, and I'm surprised that they did not come over, because my indications is that they were all part of the court record. But it was
part of—
Did
you request them in your notice of— Did you request them in your notice of appeal?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
I mean, I can be corrected on that, but both sides have cited to exhibits in their briefing, and it was my understanding the exhibits were part of the record. I mean, we're talking binders. We're talking like five or six white binders of exhibits, hundreds of exhibits. But there was no evidence that there was a grant deed, or as to what was granted, what the deed related to, whether it was delivered. And essentially what you have is arguably a lost deed issue, which wouldn't be something that the magistrate court in a divorce action would be a court of competent jurisdiction to decide. And in fact, because it's a Utah parcel of property, it would fall under the Utah statute of frauds. And if you look at the Andre versus Morrow case, which states that an Idaho court can't directly affect title to property that's located in another state. So you've got that issue.
Idaho court can certainly direct and exercise jurisdiction over stock or membership in a corporation, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Any further questions, or do you want me to proceed?
Go ahead and proceed. Thank you for those clarifications.
Okay. Idaho Code, 32.712 specifically speaks to the court's jurisdiction.
I do have a question, Mr. Pica. You indicated that the magistrate court was not a competent court to rule on the deed. Did you say that, or did I mishear you? And would you explain it if if I did?
Well, one, you know, the magistrate court in Idaho, one, my understanding is a district court in Idaho is the court of competent jurisdiction as to determining interest in property under Idaho statute of frauds. Now, in this case, it's a parcel of property that's in the state of Utah. And the statute of frauds in the state of Utah is very clear that only the district court or the Utah court in the county in which the property is located in Utah can determine anyone's interest in regard to property located in the state of Utah in that county. And I also believe there's a, and we cited in the briefing, and I can't specifically point to it right now, a U.S. Supreme Court case that discussed a parcel of real property, I believe it was in Nebraska, and made the same ruling that only the court in the state where the real property is located has jurisdiction over that property, Your Honor.
So you're saying that the divorce court can't order the sale of property, for example, the Cabo San Lucas property that this couple owned at the time of their divorce?
The court can order a sale of community property owned by the parties. Okay. The court can't order the sale of property owned by a third party entity, which in this case the property was held by Sun Mountain Broadcasting Inc. That is where the deed, who held the deed. And
At the time that I understood the final property order was entered, which you mentioned in your opening remarks, it was 2003. I understood it was 2005. But in any event, regardless of the date, I mean, it seems to me that the property schedule envisions that the property, it identifies the Salt Lake property as the property, and in the notes says that it's held by BNC. So at least at the time that the final order was entered, the parties were laboring under the impression or under the belief that the property was held by these two people's LLC. I understood they're the sole members of this LLC. Certainly the cover letter that I saw referenced in Judge Kibido's opinion from the lawyer indicating that an executed deed was enclosed seems to be consistent with that. So then somewhere back in, now we're into 2007 in the Judge Day hearing, it appears that the parties understand that in fact there was, now the parties seem to be understanding that the property is not in the LLC's name. Am I right about all of that?
That is correct. Yeah, in the 2007 hearing, on the record, Judge Day stated that the court did not have jurisdiction to divide the property because it was owned by a third party entity, Sun Mountain Broadcasting Company, and that he specifically stated on the record that the property was not community property because it was not owned by the parties, and that he had no jurisdiction, or the court had no jurisdiction, I should say, over any of the workings of Sun Mountain Broadcasting or BNC Realty, and that he only had jurisdiction over the stock of Sun Mountain Broadcasting.
Mr. Pica, is that really an accurate representation of what the court was doing there? I mean, was it really making a ruling on those things? Or was it really discussing in the context of discussing the party's contempt settlement, which I understood this thing came up, there were six, I think, motions for contempt, that he was really clarifying what the parties were doing, and he was really clarifying that the first final order contained an error in it, in terms of where the property was held.
Yes, and you know, we've called it a ruling, and you're correct, this was a contempt proceeding that really what happened here was an ancillary to the contempt proceeding. Judge Day had called the parties into chambers and basically said somebody's going to be going to jail. Attorneys went out and talked to their clients, and nobody was real interested in going to jail. and at that point, this settlement discussion ensued. And I'll be frank with you. I mean, we're talking 13 years ago. I had just gotten involved in the case at that time and was focused on the contempt. That's why I was brought in. And at that time, I did not understand all the property issues or anything else. That a lot of that is water under the bridge and handled by other attorneys. But anyway.
Well, but it's kind of not water under the bridge, because we're here arguing, as I understand your client's position, that there was no jurisdiction to enter the order. So, I mean, I'd like to say it's water under the bridge, but.
Well, right. Well, I mean, a lot had happened previously. In the settlement discussions, what was being requested by the appellant was that the property be deeded into BNC Realty. And what Judge Day was saying is, I can't do that. And because of the jurisdictional issues, because it's owned by a third party entity. And what he said on the record, and he said, I want to make the record clear of what we're doing here, is that the parties are stipulating to transfer the stock into BNC Realty. And that's what was being done. So as we move forward,
I thought Judge Day, what he was doing was articulating the party's settlement. And what he was articulating was the fact that the parties had agreed that the marital asset was the stock of Sun Mountain Broadcasting, and that the stock would be split between the two parties. And that that husband would cause to be transferred the real estate from the corporation to the party's LLC. I understood that was the settlement agreement that Judge Day articulated, and that was certainly the order that was drafted, signed off by you as to form and content, and entered by Judge Day, right?
Okay.
I apologize for interrupting. IPTV is no longer in the Zoom environment. Do you want to stop, or would you like to continue?
I think we'll continue.
Thank you.
May proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, if I might clarify, do we have, if IPT is not here, do we have a recording of this hearing?
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
If you review the transcript, it's very specific that what Judge Day was saying the settlement was, and what the parties stipulated to, was that the stock would be transferred by Mr. Smith into BNC Realty. There was no mention of the Salt Lake property being transferred whatsoever. Two, there was never a discussion as to whether the stock was marital property. The sole discussion was that it was an omitted asset. There was never a ruling that the stock was marital property or community property. And it was not, because it had been acquired prior to marriage.
The party stipulated to it. Why can the husband attack that now?
What it stipulated to what, Your Honor?
Stipulated that it was subject, that it was the party's marital property, and that it was subject to equal division.
On the record, he did not stipulate to that.
You don't think the order entered by Judge Day does that?
No.
Okay.
No. And in fact, if you look at the order, it's kind of an interesting order, because in regard to that paragraph, it says that the order was that the parties would stipulate and agree. Okay. And the order also says that it was being entered pursuant to the stipulation placed on the record. Well, what was placed on the record and what was placed in the order were two different two different things, but it said the parties would stipulate and agree.
So and what again, what does this court enforce? The what you think was on the record or the written document?
Well, I don't think there's anything enforceable in the written document because it said ordered the parties to stipulate and agree. And two, the court didn't have jurisdiction over the property. And if you look at the case law in regard to petitions to modify, and I'm a, it was brought under IRFLP Rule 809, the petition to modify. If you look at the case law, Fix versus Fix, which is cited, the court has to go back and look to see if it had jurisdiction to enter the original order. And the court never had jurisdiction over the real property because it wasn't owned by the parties. There's just
and the parties, excuse me, go ahead, Mr. Pica.
No, Your Honor, that's fine. I see I
can the parties waive jurisdiction?
No, the parties, then the case law is very clear on that, that the parties can never waive jurisdiction.
If they settle, if they admit that in fact that they have agreed that the Salt Lake property would be turned into B&C Realty LLC?
Well, I mean,
they agreed it was an asset of the marriage.
He didn't agree it was an asset to the marriage. He agreed to transfer the stock.
Okay. Well, Mr. Pica, I'm looking at Judge Day's order right now, and it says the parties stipulate and agree that Sun Mountain Broadcasting, Inc. is an omitted asset which was not divided pursuant to this court's June 28, 2005 final order. With respect to this omitted asset, the parties agree that it should be equally divided. How is that not an agreement that the that it's a marital asset and that it should be divided equally?
It doesn't state that it's a marital asset, Your Honor.
Well, why would it say that it's to be divided equally if that isn't the logical inference?
That
it wouldn't be divided equally if it were not a marital asset.
There's still a jurisdictional issue as to whether the court can order that, and it wasn't a marital asset because the parties didn't hold a deed. And it was on the record they didn't hold a deed.
Then why would your client stipulate that it should be divided equally?
He didn't stipulate to that on the record, Your Honor. He stipulated to transfer it into the he stipulated to transfer.
On May 14, 2007, Judge Day issued an order stating that your client agreed that it would be divided equally. Okay. I can't read it any other way.
And he didn't have jurisdiction to make that order, even if it was stipulated to by the parties, because the court didn't have jurisdiction over the asset, over the real property.
Is it a judicial admission then that he owes half of that, even if the court doesn't have jurisdiction? Is it a judicial admission that he owes half of the value of that property?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. I see my time is up too, but I mean, obviously the court wants to ask me more questions.
No, that's fine. If you would, you've answered my question. Are you finished at this time, Mr.
Yes.
Pica? Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Welsh, you're still on mute, so as soon as you get off, you can start yakking.
I did do that, Your Honor. I've done several Zoom trials, Your Honor. I had a hard time getting used to this process. I did a May 1 Zoom trial, so... Thank you, Your Honor, and good to be back before the court. Chief Justice Burdick, members of the court, Mr. Pica. Ballard Smith's conduct, which caused this litigation, and his conduct in the litigation and testimony was similar to his conduct throughout the divorce case where he's held in contempt numerous times. When this action was, I'm gonna go back through a couple points with the court, and I know you've got all of our briefing, but when the action was filed, Ballard could not be located to be served. Charlie had to publish notice. The day before a default hearing on publication, Ballard filed an appearance. Because he did not answer, Charlie served a notice to him to take default. Default hearing was set. The day of the hearing, he answered. Ballard Smith was playing games. He has a law degree. and he did practice law sometime in the remote past. All actions done by Ballard Smith was to delay and make this case more difficult, similar to the divorce case that went on for some time, several years, as the court knows from the record this matter.
Mr. Welsh, just for my clarification, when you say this case and the divorce case, can you clarify for me? I assumed you were talking about the initiation of the divorce complaint, but are you talking about the petition to modify?
I am talking about the petition under Rule 809, Judge Bevin, Justice Bevin, on that proceeding that started with the action we filed for Ballard, for Charlie Smith Daniel.
And that's when the default threat was made, and when an answer was filed then, the day of the hearing on that default for the petition.
Correct.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Thank you.
No problem, thank you. In 2007, based on stipulation, Ballard was ordered to transfer all of the Salt Lake City property deeded to Sun Mountain to BNC Realty LLC. The property consisted of approximately 54 acres. There's been several references to a document that obviously, maybe it's not obvious actually, it was signed by the parties, prepared by my office, by me probably, back in 2005 on a property and debt schedule, which we use routinely in divorce cases. You know, Justice Burdick has a prior time as a magistrate judge. I'm not sure back in that era we used the same type of property and debt schedule, but we've used these for quite a few years. And there's remarks in there about a different acreage. That comes up several times in the transcript of this case by Ballard Smith, trying to go ahead and capitalize on some statement there that all that was a subject of this case was really only 48 acres, not 54 acres. There's been a reference throughout
counsel, since you brought up the use of the property and debt schedule, then the one that was attached to the original action back in 2005 and signed by Magistrate Judge Boomer, who drafted that document, the property and debt schedule?
Well, I probably drafted the property and debt schedule, approved by the parties, obviously, and signed by the parties. So the drafter was probably me based on the information the parties would have provided. I would note that obviously when the parties did sign that document, both of the parties understood at the time they prepared it that they were the owners of the Salt Lake City property. And if you look at the body of the judgment that refers to the sale of the property, that's referenced by Justice Schroeder in his decision, Judge Kibitow in her findings, that the property, the real property was to be sold. What they believed back then, and by the way, there was no reference ever in those documents or in a couple other exhibits that are referred to throughout the trial, communications, there was offers made by Ballard Smith in which he offered to actually have my client take the Salt Lake City property at one time, never mentioned the stock. By the time of the divorce, the corporation had actually been dissolved. It was dissolved 1995, December. The dissolution documents was prepared or filed in January of 1996. The corporate existence ceased to be. Ballard Smith, as you know from the transcript throughout this proceeding, we established that he referred to himself as being the sole shareholder. Unfortunately, what happened is some of this back in 2001, 2002, 2003 was not known. In the transcript of this case, you'll note on the testimony from Charlie Smith, in her testimony at one point, she describes the fact that their only child, then 12-year-old Trevor, had been diagnosed with cancer. Obviously difficult for any parent. She's going through that. Obviously, there was a lot of distraction from that. But we did not have, I think, and we did not have in 2007, you'll note, we were before Judge Day, one of my partners, Matt Vaughn, actually went to that hearing, did not have the document from the attorney Berger that he authored, which you referred to earlier. There's a reference to that, that he said the deed has been signed. The deed's never been located. Interesting why, but the deed's never been located. So we believe the deed would still be valid. As a reference to the deed, the property was already transferred. The parties already owned the Salt Lake City property. I'm not gonna debate with Judge Day. Judge Day did think there was an omitted asset that we had to cover. I may be trying to defend some document that I prepared back in 2005. I think it wasn't an admitted asset. I think it is covered by the judgment. I think from day one, these parties knew they owned the Salt Lake City property, and or the Salt Lake City property was an asset of a solely owned LLC, BNC Realty, where they're the only members of this thing. There's also a reference.
So, Mr. Welsh, let me ask you a little bit about that that order that was entered by Judge Day that describes the omitted asset. It appears to me that your office prepared that order, and it describes it calls this stock an omitted asset. And so I want your views as to whether we take that into consideration or how we should take that into consideration when deciding whether the stock was an omitted asset. Because the as I understood the husband's argument, he's saying, at least at one point in his briefing, there was no jurisdiction to modify the final order in 2007. It was final, it wasn't challenged, it was 42 days went by, and I guess really what I'm getting at is what authority a court has to modify a final divorce order, property settlement, after the 42 days, to modify it to include an omitted asset.
I think this court's done that, and in one of the cases I argued to this court, name escapes me right now, but the omitted asset actions, I think, are permissible within the divorce case or as an independent action. I think both cases have hit this court in the past, that you can proceed to file for an omitted asset within the divorce case itself or as a separate legal proceeding. So either one of those, Justice Brody, have been permitted by this court and the Court of Appeals over time. I can't remember the case. It's a case I actually tried. You'd think I remember some cases I tried and argued there, but maybe too many years have passed, but there's been a case I know where that very fact, it was one of the retirement benefit cases.
Mr. Welsh, your colleague is trying to pass you a note.
Oh, thank you, Judge. Thank you. Thank you, Judge. So I believe the court could do that. Let me go back though. And I thought about this, whether you're going to say that that we really did have to omitted asset as Judge Day was trying to clear up for the parties. Everybody knew that the Salt Lake City property was to be sold and the proceeds divided, whether within BNC Realty or otherwise. I think that the parties thought that it was their asset, and that's why the reference was done in a document they signed. It was in documents, was covered in proposals to settle, which weren't offered for settlement purposes, but were offered to show what Beller Smith thought at the time of the divorce negotiation prior to 2005.
Counsel, I'd like to return to that for a second, because you made several references to documents that were signed by the parties, the schedules that were signed by the parties. I've looked through the record. I can't find any signed schedules. I see them attached to other things, but none of them seem to bear the signatures of the parties. Can you point me in the record where it might show a signed schedule?
The document that was referred to was a written proposal from Greg Pittenger, the attorney then representing Ballard. And there was a document prepared by Ballard. It wasn't signed other than what they signed when they stipulated to the entry of the 2005 order dividing assets, which attached the property debt schedule, and had in the body of the document that they were going to sell the property and divide the proceeds and keep jurisdiction. But regardless of whether or not you go back to 2005, I don't think you need to do that, because in 2007, what they did is they stipulated to go ahead and put the property into BNC Realty, where I think they thought it was back in 2005. And then it would be liquidated and the proceeds equally divided. Mr. Pica made a reference to nowhere did they agree to put the property into this document. Justice Schroeder, who former Justice Schroeder of this court, senior district judge handling appeals many years now in Ada County, in his decision at page 23 in a footnote, He refers to the fact that Mr. Pica made that same argument before him. And in his footnote, he quotes directly to the stipulation placed on the record where exactly the language we're using was said, that the property was going to go there, not just the stock. And there is some, if you look at that and you look back, there's talk about stock, there's talk about the property. Ultimately, what the deal was is that the property was going to go into there, not the stock. The stock, the only thing that existed back then, the corporation was dissolved. The only thing the corporation can do with a dissolved is transfer out the assets to the to whoever's rightfully owed. And what was stated back in 1996 was it had all been distributed out. There were no other owners. And I'll come back to that if we have time in this presentation, but some claim that there's other owners in this thing. So there's zero doubt, no matter whatever, however far you back, go back. There's also been a reference to whether or not it's a community asset or separate asset. Idaho law, which is, I think, probably go back to Brocklebank, which some of you all remember maybe from reading about Brocklebank and his early book on community property law in Idaho, and I think it's black letter law in Idaho, that at divorce, every asset in the name of the husband or the wife or both are presumed to be community property. A party asserting separate has to prove it's separate property. This case has something else that's not, I don't think, before you, but it is in the record of this case from the trial. What had happened is after the marriage, there was some dispute. A local state planning lawyer, John Thornton, who some of you may be familiar with, John Thornton prepared a transmutation agreement making everything community property. That's why there was no dispute. It actually even made jewelry, made everything that they owned. That's back in the record of this case. It was in evidence. It wasn't really an issue in this case, so it wasn't presented in the trial we had before Judge Kibito. But there's zero doubt, I think, for a variety of reasons why there was no issue. But even if it wasn't community property, which I don't think that's correct at all, I think that argument is a frivolous argument, parties for a variety of reasons in divorce cases will agree. So there may be some other claims, or they may want to resolve, say, a spousal support claim, and they want to agree that their separate property is divided. You can award at divorce and do that. Clearly, under Pringle, the court doesn't have the power to award separate property without an agreement. But in this case, there's no doubt there was an agreement in 2005. There's an agreement in 2007 from the April 20 hearing, and that's what happened. So this argument, I think, is without merit. Think that this suggests that this is not community property. I've never tracked the jurisdictional argument. The Andres case, I think, makes crystal clear, and I think this has been the understanding for my whole law career, and I think for any judge that I've ever been before, that if you've got two divorce parties before you, you can tell them what to do with property. In the Andres case involved a California order, you could tell them what to do with a property anywhere. You aren't adjudicating real property rights in another jurisdiction, but you have the two parties before you, and that's who you're addressing. And that's who Judge Day addressed. That's who Judge Boomer addressed, is the parties before him. I think that argument is, again, frivolous. I think the whole jurisdictional argument, which was rejected by Judge Kibito, rejected by Judge Schroeder in his 48-page decision, that made no sense. Not before you, but I think it's also been rejected by a couple other judges in this case, subsequently Judge Comstock, somebody else that happened to have this case. It's seen a number of judges. I think Judge Reardon had it, Judge Comstock had it, Judge Day, Judge Boomer had it. Subsequently, Judge Boomer was in conflict with Ballard. Judge Boomer got out of the case, probably to his wise call. So it's had a lot of judges that have hit the case over the years with the protracted litigation. So that's what happened. As I mentioned a moment ago, the 2007, based on stipulation of the parties and their attorneys, and agreed that all of the Sun Mountain property, which would have been 54 acres, would be transferred. About 8 months later, as we noted before, not all the property was transferred. Ballard Smith admitted 6 acres. A deed done 8 months later was not recorded for reasons, again, I don't know. Ballard Smith later sold the 6 acres and argued in this case and presented testimony on day one of the trial that we had on June 1, 2015. And I just would submit the court, if you have any doubt about the games and the playing and the dishonesty and the deceitfulness, the testimony from June 1 from Mr. Smith and the testimony he gave at the, I think, the last day of the trial when he was examined again, illustrates the total dishonesty by Mr. Smith. He argued in this case the 6 acres were never to be included in the 2007 order. There's a reference and there's a quotation in Judge Kibito, Judge Justice Schroeder, about the letter from Mr. Pica not long after saying, although all the property was to go to the LLC, that's not talking about the stock. Mr. Pica's letter says all the property was to go to the LLC. Then maybe they shouldn't put the 6 acres in because of some contamination. So that's what he argues, and he argues throughout that. And then he refers back, by the way, in his testimony on day one that we had in this case, Dollar Smith himself acknowledged that they had this property back in the 2005 order. He wants to be critical of me in his exchange, and you'll note if you want to have some light reading of that portion of the transcript, a lot of the time debating with me, Justice Judge Kibito tried to have him answer the questions. But he wanted to say that it was my mistake because I used 48 acres and therefore the 6 acre was never to be included in anything. Well, if it wasn't to be included, it was to be included from the 2007 order as clearly stated on the record, all the Sun Mountain property as reflected by the judicial admission from his own attorney in the letter that he wrote to me following that was admitted into evidence saying that we want to keep the 6 acres out to protect the parties. So that's what he did. On the 6 acres, ultimately he sold the 6 acres, another bad act, another deceitful act by him, kept the proceeds. And on the first day of trial, when he was asked a question about what it was sold for, another deceitful act, so I think I'll make a guess of $40,000. Ballard Smith guessing $40,000 when he knew he had sold it for $220,000 not long before then, another attempted deceitful act. As we were having difficulty, you'll know from the record, getting the records, getting the documents on the sale. Because, as I note also, what he does with the LLCs, and you know this from the record, we have a BNC LLC that existed at the time of divorce, Ballard and Charlie LLC, that's what it stood for, is from the record. What he does is he changes the name to SNR, the R for RSNL, a new wife, changes the name without my client knowing. And then he changes it. He does a Utah LLC by the same name as his Idaho LLC, where he had changed the name, transfers property from the Utah LLC, and then numerous transfers over there, deeds all over the place, transactions by him. And the other question is what is this property? And I know that Justice Schroeder, I think, did a very good job of his analysis of saying, what did they own? Did they own the LLC? Are you dealing with an LLC? If you are, that's fine, because it's clear what you do with the LLC. If you're not, if you're dealing with real property, Ballard Smith treated this like he owned it. He put it on his tax return. He took the $200,000+, paid attorney's fees, his own personal litigation expenses, paid whatever expenses he wanted. There was another $40,000 that came in from Clear Channel. I don't think we could ever really track where that went. He took rental income and did what he wanted with it. On his personal tax return, not an LLC return. He treated this asset as being his own return throughout. So clearly, I think fraud by him on doing that. Another issue I'd just like to touch on a minute, and I don't know the court needs a whole lot from me on this whole thing. Are there other owners? I've always understood Idaho law, and I'm sure this court maybe seen this issue before, or maybe Justice Burdick had it in his early career getting to hear divorce cases a few years ago. Maybe you had a case. I've always understood if you got a third party, and this typically comes up with a parent loan to one of the divorcing parties. They're not a party to the divorce case. I understand that. I understand creditors can't be adjudicated in a divorce case. So the question is, could we adjudicate the rights of, if there were other shareholders of Sun Mountain Broadcasting, could that be adjudicated? Well, I submit to you, there were no other shareholders. Justice Kibito, Judge Kibito found that, Senior Judge Schroeder found that, and the record is overwhelming that there were no other shareholders. That was a sham. It was an invented claim. I think invented as the earliest date, I think, and Judge Kibito notes this, or Justice Schroeder, was in 2013. So from 2001, when this divorce case starts, 2005 judgment, of course, no mention of anybody else. 2007, when you're before a court and saying, we're going to put the property into an LLC, no mention, hey, by the way, we got to share this with some other people on this case. That was a sham. It's an argument. It was a lie by him, invented. He brought somebody up. He paid for a trip for Mr. Palmer. I know his testimony before you. You have it in there. Some brief testimony from Mr. Palmer. Mr. Palmer, who unfortunately has died now since this has all been going on, but brought him up. I think his testimony was incredible. I think his testimony was something done to try to facilitate another false claim, a fraudulent claim by Ballard Smith throughout. Represented in a statement to Clear Channel. I was the sole shareholder. Represented numerous times. The only one with any ownership interest was him and Charlie. They owned this thing. So the claim there's other owners, whether they could file, and it's not before the court today, but any kind of effort he has in another state, I think that any other court would find, I'm not sure if there'd be collateral estoppel, as Mr. Palmer from testimony, I haven't studied that issue in recent years since I really had a collateral estoppel, but I think that they would lose litigation based on all the evidence that we have. I think Judge Kibitow, Justice Schroeder correctly analyzed the separate ownership interest, and that there were no other owners, that no one else had an ownership interest in this. I think the evidence, along with the fact that Ballard and Charlie understood at the time of the divorce that the Salt Lake City property was their community property, owned by community and or BNC Realty LLC, is consistent with the deed that was referred to in the Berger letter, and it's consistent with the BNC tax returns when they're filing tax returns. They reported all the income back on these other owners. No other owner was ever given anything. When Ballard, I think fraudulently and maybe criminally, sold and kept the money from the 6 acres, no effort to give it to anybody else, never a bill to anybody else. Then he has a sham document that was invented into evidence and referred to in the transcript in the testimony for Judge Kibitow, that he never contacted them about the proceeds, never sent them a bill ever. But then he had a deal saying, I'll give you a dollar if you don't pay me something. This was more fraudulent action by him, more, I think, borders on criminal action. As maybe this, some people in this court know, I've never done a criminal case in my career, so I hate to tell someone it's a crime or not a crime, but a little bit of memory from a lot of years ago. Our response to Ballard's legal arguments are fully addressed in the legal memorandum that we filed. The arguments that Ballard makes are frivolous, and there is no substance to any of the arguments he's making in this appeal, nor were there any substance in the appeal that he made from Judge Kibitow to the district court level. This was a motion under Family Rule 809. I know that the court had that in some other cases. I think this was clearly a proper case for Rule 809, the old Rule 60B that the court would still see sometimes. This was clearly fit within that, as found by Judge Kibitow, affirmed by Justice Schroeder. The order that was entered by Judge Kibitow changed only the means of disposal of this asset, nothing else. The receiver was properly appointed. I know this court addressed this issue not very long ago in the Weschler decision in a post-judgment matter. I thought to myself, if Weschler justified a post-judgment to get some money collected, this clearly justifies it. When you look at all the action by Ballard Smith, the listing agreements, that's gone through in detail in the transcript of this matter. I won't go back through all of them. His sale of the property, retention of the money, keeping the rental income, not paying the taxes. Judge Schroeder, Judge Kibitow listened to the evidence patiently for four full days, allowed additional time by Ballard Smith to submit additional information post-trial. She wrote, a comprehensive, well-reasoned decision, findings of fact, and conclusions of law. On appeal, Judge Schroeder listened to the argument. He considered the record and all the briefing. and authored a, I think, a well-reasoned 48-page decision. There was substantial and competent evidence to support Judge Kibito's findings. Judge Kibito's conclusions of law followed her findings. There is no basis for this appeal. The decision of Justice Schroeder should be affirmed. This court has recently, I think in the Griffin case, you've re-announced your standard of review on this type of case numerous times. I'm not going to go through that. I know this court knows your review standard very well. The decision of Justice Schroeder should be affirmed, and Charlie should be awarded all attorney's fees and costs incurred in this appeal. This again is a frivolous appeal. He was frivolous and unreasonable in the divorce case, and to suggest otherwise, I think, is belies reality. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, sir. How much time does the appellant have, madam?
7 minutes, Your Honor.
Mr. Pica?
Your Honor, what strikes me in listening to the respondent's argument and what I think this court really needs to take note of is at no time has anybody argued, nor does the record reflect, that Ballard Smith or Charlie Smith were ever owners of this property. Not at any single moment, okay? During the marriage or even after marriage, okay? So how does the court get jurisdiction over real property that's owned by another legal entity? If you look at the Berger letter, okay, and the court decides, well, there was a lost deed out there, okay? And if the Berger letter says a portion, what the Berger letter refers to is as the transmitter portion of the property. So it clearly wasn't referring to the whole property, okay? What this property is down in Salt Lake is, and it's a mess, is there's radio towers on this property that have radials that go out from the radio towers. None of that can be developed. There's a perpetual lease on the property, okay? And then there are wetlands. I mean, this property is in a prime area in Salt Lake, other than the fact that it's got so many issues, it's incredible. But the bottom line is the parties have never held a deed to this property. And yet the Rule 809 motion is specifically as to the real property. Even if BNC holds the property, if the court decides BNC holds the property, this court doesn't, there's no jurisdiction of the divorce court over BNC.
Why doesn't the Andres case guide our opinion on that issue? That is to say that while the court doesn't, for example, have the jurisdiction to order the SMB to do something, it can order Mr. Smith to do something.
Because Mr. Smith is separate and apart from the legal entities. His role as a member of BNC or his role as an officer of SMB is totally separate and apart from his role as an individual. And the LLC statutes in Idaho are very clear that the district court has control over the dissolution of an LLC. And if that was the issue, that's where it should have been decided. That's the action that should have been brought in regard to the LLC, okay?
So, but counsel, the implication of your argument then is in almost any divorce involving out-of-state property, there's gonna need to be some kind of ancillary proceeding brought, kind of like we do in probate with the breed of cat, obviously. But you're basically suggesting if property is put into an LLC or corporation from out-of-state, it can't be adjudicated in Idaho. You have to file an ancillary proceeding in another state in order to divide it. Is that what you're saying?
No, the LLC can be divided. The property can't be divided.
Well, then okay. How would you divide the property then?
You don't divide. The property is the LLC. And the LLC statute states that a property interest in an LLC is a personal property interest. So if the court decides in a divorce court, the divorce court divides the asset that the parties own. If the asset is an LLC, the court decides the membership interest. They don't divide the assets of the LLC, okay? If the LLC is dissolved, then there's statutes that govern how those assets are distributed within the LLC. Okay, but the divorce court only divides the property as it exists. It doesn't get into the underlying assets of the legal entity, whether it's the corporation, what have you.
Then doesn't that go back to Justice Burdick's first question, which was, then doesn't husband owe wife half the value of the property?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Then doesn't your argument go right back to Justice Burdick's first question, which was, if that's the case, that we can't, that the court cannot order the, order Mr. Pica to sell the property, excuse me, Mr. Smith to sell the property, that he then owes his former wife half the value of it.
Half the value of what? The property or the LLC?
Well, look, you've got a single asset LLC, all right? So, you know, in this case, okay. I recognize that in some cases that might be, there might be a difference, but here there's okay. No difference.
Okay, but just because the LLC is a potentially community, it's who parties contribute capital to an LLC, okay? They have capital accounts. And the capital accounts may be different. If it was his separate property, the community didn't contribute to it, he did, okay? So you've got that issue within the LLC.
So Mr. Peake, I wanna go back to Judge Day's order from 13 years ago. It says, BNC Realty LLC is to be dissolved. All of its assets sold and the proceeds from any such sale shall be split equally between Charlie Smith and Ballard Smith.
Okay.
Isn't this a thing decided? Isn't that res judicata to the argument that you're making?
No, Your Honor, because Judge Day had no jurisdiction to order the dissolution of BNC Realty and oversee that. Only the district court under the statutes, the LLC statutes, would have had that jurisdiction.
Was that order appealed?
No, Your Honor, it was
not. Was there a motion to reconsider?
No.
All right.
And didn't your Why client is it? Agree to it?
He agreed to what was placed on the record. I did sign the approved as the content. Okay. But he did not sign the stipulation to enter that order. What was on the record is what he stipulated to, and it's very clear what he agreed to. And if you look at
again, irrespective, was that appealed?
No.
Was there a motion to reconsider?
No.
All right. Why is that not binding on your client?
Okay. Again, it's a jurisdictional issue. And also, if you read that order, it says the parties stipulate and agree. Okay. It doesn't say that it says further, the parties stipulate and agree, A, that Ballard Smith will do that. Okay. The court didn't order the Ballard to do anything. He ordered the order is poorly written. Okay.
Was it appealed?
No.
Was Why there a motion to reconsider?
No.
It seems to me you're cutting an onion pretty darn thin, Derek.
Well, you have a deed to real property that's owned by a third party. Everything's owned by a third party here.
We understand the argument you're making, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, we do. Mr. Bevan, did you have a question that I thought? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, thanks, Chief. I'm good.
Okay. If we go to the property that was sold, the statement was made that Ballard kept all the money. He didn't keep all the money. It's right in the record that $106,000 of it went to back taxes. It's in the record that the rents didn't cover the taxes and over the years. It's in the record that Charlie Smith never paid a dime in taxes.
Did he ever tell Charlie Smith that he had sold the property?
That I don't know, Your Honor. I was not involved in the case when that happened. I don't recall. Okay. But the back taxes were owed. If you look at the record in 2012, they say all these bad acts of Ballard. Ballard was able to renegotiate a lease because he discovered with it's now iHeart, it used to be Clear Channel, and it cost him extensive attorney's fees. I wasn't involved in the renegotiation. It occurred in Utah to up the lease amount to $30,000 a year versus I think they were getting like $11,000 a year because it was discovered that the radials actually encroached on other property that wasn't being leased by Clear Channel, and he was able to leverage that into a new lease. Prior to that, it had been a perpetual lease.
Did he share any of the proceeds of the money that he received from Clear Channel or iHeart Radio with his former wife?
Prior to 2013, no, because it was being paid on the property taxes, and it didn't cover the property taxes. That's where the money went. There were about 8 years in there where there was not enough funds being generated by the property to cover the property taxes, and he was the one that was paying them, plus any deficiencies out of his own pocket.
Oh, I believe we're over time. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just noticed that, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pica, Mr. Welch. Matter is now under advisement. We will render decision. Thank you.
Thank you.